When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, hello there, Chris Evans here, and welcome along to this jam-packed edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up today, the Shine retiring Piers Morgan talks us through his snowflake melting new show, Uncensored, airing daily on the new Talk TV channel. Top 10 Jack Whitehall tells us how he's getting involved in Stop Food Waste Day with some delicious cocktail recipes of all things. And the glamour puss Boy George telling us about three huge culture club shows taking place this summer, which you can attend and buy tickets for, and the hilarious and brilliant and gorgeous and warm and lovely genius Ramesh Ranganathan takes us behind the scenes for the fourth series of Sky Max's Rob and Ramesh Versus. All of that and so much more to come, so Dapper Dave, kick us off, please do.
He stormed off GMB and now he's cooking up a storm with a new show on a new channel. His brand new global programme, Uncensored, starts tonight at 8 p.m. on the brand new Talk TV. So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the fire-breathing arch-inquisitor looking to melt some snowflakes. It's Piers Morgan!
Good morning, Piers. So, morning. Here we go. When is it? Where is it? What is it? Why is it?
Okay, well, the why is because the nation has been waiting for me to be back on television. Where is it? It's on Talk TV, which is this brilliant new network for Talk, launching tonight at 7 o'clock. The where is it? Everywhere. You can get it on Sky, you can get it on Freeview, Freesat, you can get it on the app, you can get it on YouTube. So it will be everywhere. There's no escaping me. A bit like the billboards you've been trying to avoid me all morning. You will not be able to escape.
Well, here's the thing. I wasn't trying to avoid them. All I said was, if I wanted to, I wouldn't be able to. That's the difference. And they tell a story from the burbs all the way in, because they're all different. I don't know if you know.
I mean, the marketing has been brilliant, I have to say, and it's great to work at this company. We're now colleagues, Chris. Who would have thought of that?
Yeah, well, you know, let's talk about the different tempos in your career and the big top of Piers Morgan. So the first big one, would that have been you editing Bizarre? Would that have been the first one?
I think
one?
So, because Bizarre actually still going, obviously, strongly as the number one kind of showbiz column. But Bizarre was an odd training ground. It produced more editors than any column in the history of Fleet Street.
Right.
Literally, like, probably five or six people went on to become national newspaper editors, which is pretty extraordinary for what was a showbiz column. So I felt that it was a brilliant training ground, because in a way, it's a micro paper. You were trying to find a lead story, a picture story, little bits and pieces, some fun, some serious. So it was a good training for young journalists.
And the next one?
Next one was Rupert Murdoch made me editor of the News of the World when I was 28, which was, I think I was, of the 110 staff, I was the third youngest member of my own staff, which was a weird kind of dynamic to operate in.
What did you learn from that?
I learned that I was very good at spotting talent, because one of my young feature writers, who was one of the only other two people younger than me, was a certain Rebecca Brooks, who now runs this company.
Yes, she
employs you. So that
who was the best boss? You to her or she to you?
It's interesting, because I would say me, she would say her.
Right.
Probably the mixture of the both is what works better, yeah.
Okay. Right, so next one?
Well, next one, I then went to the Daily Mirror, ran that for nearly 10 years. I then left that in pretty dramatic circumstances over the Iraq photo scandal, as it was portrayed, which I still stand by. And then I was kind of in the wilderness, and I had that sort of weird period where I didn't know what that... I thought... I only ever wanted to be a newspaper journalist. Then I wanted to be a newspaper editor. Yes, I was one of the youngest ever to do it. I was also one of the youngest ever to be fired doing it. I was like, what do I do? I'm not even 40. What do I do? And my old friend Simon Cowell rode to the rescue. He came along, took me for lunch. I remember it vividly. The Belvedere restaurant in the middle of Holland Park. And he got a little napkin out and he said, I've just got an idea for a talent show. And he said, you know, remember the old days, like New Faces, Opportunity Knocks? There's nothing like it in the world now. He said, just an old-fashioned, any talent goes show. And he said, I'd love you to be a judge on it. And that was the catalyst for what became America's Got Talent, Britain's Got Talent, and is now airing in 40-odd countries.
So from Britain's Got Talent to America's Got Talent to another renaissance to the nighttime news show.
Well, actually, the most pivotal moment, probably, in terms of consequence, was when I took part... I was on America's Got Talent. It was a big show in America, still is. And I entered a show also on NBC called Celebrity Apprentice. It was the first time that they'd taken the Apprentice show and made it a celebrity one. I did that first series. And I won it. And I got to know a guy called Donald Trump, who was the host. And we became pretty good friends. And then I went to CNN and replaced Larry King. And I interviewed Trump a lot at CNN. And then this guy who used to ring me like every 3-4 weeks for a laugh and a chat and a gossip and was very loyal. If you're in his firmament and you're loyal to him, he's incredibly loyal back. He suddenly decides he's going to run for president. I remember writing a column the day he said he was running. Everyone was ridiculing him. Everyone was saying he's going to be dead in the water in 3 weeks. This is ridiculous vanity project. I wrote a column which stood the test of time saying, I think I would not underestimate Donald Trump's star power, especially in middle America, or his straight talking style, which will resonate with people. He's not a conventional politician, and he has a habit of having the last laugh. That's exactly what happened. And then, of course, he becomes the most divisive, polarizing president probably we've ever seen. And I have that interesting sort of straddle as a journalist of how do you cover a guy who's now doing good things and crazy things. Yeah. And I always just try to be fair with him.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you are a journalist, but you are a sort of new breed, and I mean that in the framing of our lives, not like, you know, the Twitter sphere and things like that. But you are an op-ed journalist because you have an opinion and you're a journalist
totally,
as well.
Yeah.
And that's not a new thing today, but it was a new thing back in the day.
I say to people, I think I'm in the opinion business.
Right.
You know, everything I do is driven really by my opinions.
Right.
And I think that comes from being a journalist. It comes from having to be as a tabloid editor for many years. You know, you've got to work out what you feel strongly about each day and express it in a lively and vivid way on the front pages, particularly like the front pages this morning, actually, because there's a massive picture of my head.
But it's an ad.
Yeah, it is.
It's a wraparound.
It is, but then you open the wraparound and there's my own story is the real splash. It's like it's a perfect double whammy.
Well, good luck with today.
Thank you.
Is it job done for this evening? Is it all
I'm
in the can?
I'm actually going to go and tape it a couple of hours before. We've got all the content, obviously.
Right.
But I'm also going to... There'll be a mission statement about what the show's about at the top of the show. And I think it will resonate with people. Whether you like me or don't like me is irrelevant. It's whether you believe that we should be entitled to opinions and whether you're sick of this joyless cancel culture nonsense. If you are... I'm going to be the show for you.
Yeah, and if you really want to know what the show's about, tune into episode 2, because that's what the show's always about.
Episode 2 is the other half of the Trump interview.
Okay, episode 3 then. Or 4.
Episode 3 and 4, and then next week,
that's when
and the week.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I totally agree. You know that. You can create a big splash around the launch, and that's fine.
No, which you should, by the way.
Which is great for awareness, but actually, the real meat and drink of this show will be when we bed down.
Well, good luck to you and everybody involved, and
thank you,
Talk TV. What's the vibe? Sorry, I know you've got to go, but I'm really interested. It's a media story. What's the vibe like at Talk TV generally?
Brilliant. I mean, I think
how many people work there? What are the studios like? Blah blah blah. In 30 seconds. Sorry,
well, a lot of them are in this building, as you know, because they're doing existing talk shows. So I think that there's already existing shows which will be on the network.
Right.
We've got 3 big primetime shows launching tonight, brand new. Tom Newton Dunn is a brilliant political journalist. He's launching
far too handsome.
Oh, he's launching a news desk show at 7. I'm on at 8, and then you get Sharon Osbourne on the anchor leg in primetime. With a show called The Talk, because we have officially uncancelled Sharon Osbourne, which I'm thrilled about.
All right, you got to go.
I have.
Goodbye.
But I could always stay along. You know that. I love talking to you. It's a great show. Good to see you.
We're in the same building now. So,
we are. We're colleagues.
Don't be a stranger.
Does that mean we can go to the pub and get drunk?
Yes! one that neither of us own. Right. Sky, Channel 2, 526 this evening. Virgin Media, Channel 627. Freeview, Channel 237. Freesat, Channel 217. From 7 p.m. tonight, Talk TV. From 8 p.m. tonight, Piers Morgan, Uncensored.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
There's only one thing our next guest hates more than not landing a joke, and that's wasting food. He's partnered with Kettle One Vodka to mark Stop Food Waste Day, and he's here to get our cocktails wagging with some delicious recipes. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't waste it. Drink it with the wonderful Jack Whitehall.
Thank you very much, Deb and Dave. Good morning, Jack.
Hello, good morning. Hey, Chris.
How are you, naughty Jack?
I'm very good, naughty Chris.
So the last time we talked to you was about a film you were in, which did very well, even though the dog was the wrong colour.
The dog was the wrong colour, I remember. I remember your ire at the miscolouring of the dog.
It wasn't ire. It was just, I don't know what it was. It was, I wasn't angry about it at all. I was just mystified by
it. Peeved.
No, I wasn't even peeved. I was
not even peeved.
I was amused. In fact,
mystified and amused.
Morovely, yeah, that is what happened there. Yes, honestly. So, Jack, you partnered with Dutch vodka brand Ketel One to mark Stop Food Waste Day. Now, you're very much into this. This is a very authentic thing for you. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, we throw away so much food in the UK. Like 40% of the food that we get it ends up in waste disposal, and like 70% of that is coming from homes. So I teamed up with Ketel One Vodka to do this fun kind of cocktail series where we take items from your fridge that you would normally possibly be throwing away at the end of the week and trying to turn them into delicious cocktails. And I've done an online Instagram series of how to make these cocktails. But of course, you would have to be on Instagram in order to see these incredible concoctions. So that is the only caveat.
See, I think I am convinced now, and it's not taken long. It rarely does. It's taken less than 24 hours. I'm convinced that I'm missing out because I'm not on Instagram. But I know it's a double-edged sword. It can be. But then it's up to us to keep control of what's going on there. How long have you been on Insta for?
I don't even know how long I was, but I was quite a late adopter. I was like, I don't need Instagram. And then I eventually got it. I was like really committed to MySpace for a long time, even after everyone was like, no one's on MySpace anymore. I was like, that's kind of why I like it. I don't have to communicate with anyone. I can just put the photos up. There's very little pressure. But eventually I realized that I was going to have to make the switch. And now I am an Instagrammer. I can't believe I'm going to tell you, I'm actually a TikToker, which I don't think is acceptable at my age.
Whole different level. Right. Shark Investor Waters out there. Because you've got to be funny on TikTok, haven't you? Oh,
yeah. Well, I just repackage a load of old jokes and do lovely videos of me shaking cocktails.
Do you feel the need to post, or do you just feel naturally, oh, this would be make a good post, or actually it's part of my gig and part of my sort of a performative quiver that I should do this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I feel a little bit of pressure to post, but also I think as a comedian that's got like 10 years of back catalogue, there's a lot of like old material that I can sort of repurpose and stick on there. So that makes it quite easy.
See, no,
you've had a long and illustrious career, so I'm sure there's plenty of, you know, historic content that could be polished up and shared on the World Wide Web.
See, but I would go more now. I would go for now things, you know, like, you know.
No, live in the past, Chris. It's safer there.
I can't remember it. I would like to follow you because I bet it'd be fun to follow you, you know.
Can one overpost?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And one can also like smug post, like, you know, I like to show the life warts and all. You know, make right. sure it's not always, you know, the sunny side of it. I want to see some darkness as well.
Right. So
those mornings when it's not going great, and yes. you're getting mystified by a big red dog. Like, we want to know about that as well.
How did you couch the whole dog being the wrong color thing via Instagram?
I mean, there probably were a few people on Instagram that were... I mean, you could also delete comments, you know, if you're getting trolled by people because the dog is the wrong color in the movie you're in. You can, like, delete those people. You can block them. A lot of blocking.
Now, what we've done, we've all sort of had a go at what you're doing with things from the fridge in the past. But more from a, like, you know, I often try to liquidize curries the day after. You know, because everybody keeps, if you overorder a takeaway, there's guilt there, of course there is, and then you put it in the fridge and you never really use it the next day. So for a good few years, I was liquidizing curries and trying to come up with some kind of cold curry cocktail the day after.
Oh my God, yeah, I think that would be, yeah. I haven't yet tried that one, but now it feels like you've laid down the gauntlet.
Yeah, and some
people accept the challenge.
Some people have tried to liquidize meat, haven't they? So to drink their meat as opposed to eat their meat and things like that. How well has it gone with you and leftovers and cocktails?
I mean, the one I've posted today is a Bloody Mary, which feels like quite an easy option. But there were some other experiments to get there, you know, a few mishaps with an aubergine margarita, but I... You know, I'm an experimental guy and I wanted to, share with my followers the best possible cocktail, and there needed to be a degree of experimentation to arrive at that point. But I've never liquidized a curry. I have liquidized a curry, but not in cocktail form.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, we all do anyway, because the whole point is it sounds gruesome, but that's what happens when we eat it, isn't it? I mean, that's
exactly.
what we add. We we eat it, we add heat by eating it, and we self-liquidize, and then, you know, we dissolve with our acids and things like, you know how barbecue works. Have you had
explosive liquidization as well, if you get the wrong curry?
Of course. Projectile liquidization, things like that. Neighborhood liquidization, if you like. liquidization showers of leftovers. Have you had a left?
Could be good Instagram content, Chris.
Yeah, I'm thinking. As you can see, it's work in progress. You can hit
curry series.
You can hear my thoughts. Have you had any party, any leftover cocktail parties at your house thus far?
No, I haven't. But if I were to, then obviously you would be the first to be informed of said event.
Thank you.
If you're on Instagram as well, I could slide into your DMs, as the young people say, and alert you to the festivities.
That's interesting on so many levels, Jack, as you can imagine. So how does all this genuinely help?
Well, I think it's just about like breaking habits and making people, you know, think more consciously about the food that they're purchasing and putting into their fridges. And I think it's obviously a fun take on it, but it is at the end of the day, like a good initiative to try and like lower the amount of food that we're wasting every day.
Jack Whitehall, live on the radio. StopFoodWasteDay.com is where you need to go for more. Head to @kettleone, that's KETELONE on Instagram for delicious recipes from your fridge to your cocktail maker.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He changed music style and culture forever, and he's not stopping anytime soon. Culture Club are playing some very special outdoor shows this summer, and you could be there to watch the magic. Please welcome a gorgeous sprinkling of glamour we all need at this time of the morning. It's Boy George!
Hey, George!
Hello. I like that introduction. That was nice.
And you are looking very glamorous. Congratulations.
I know. Well, that's in sort of like recently, because I realised I need to up my game.
Why?
You know?
Why?
I don't know. You always need to up your game all the time, don't you? You know what I mean? What? You come into your show, don't you sometimes just want to come in and send everyone crazy? And I feel like, you know, my job is being me.
Okay, so for people who can't see, we'll put it all on Twitter or wherever. So we'll put a few images for you up there, if that's okay. What are you wearing? Who are you wearing?
I'm not wearing anyone famous, really, apart from the shoes, Alexander McQueen. But my stuff I make, or I get it made, or right. I function it from a junk. I get designer clothes sometimes for nothing, which is lovely.
So funky junk.
I never say no to a free outfit. But generally, I make things because I don't want to turn up somewhere and have the same clothes as.
So how would you describe your coat then?
Well, this is actually a little bit of a knock-up of a Margiela coat. But it's, you know, I've got favourite designers like Westwood and Margiela, John Galliano, you know, McQueen. But I want to sometimes go, oh, that looks a bit like
and
that.
And it's cash chic, if you know what I mean, that.
Yeah, it's high fashion.
Is that what it is? Wouldn't know.
High fashion with that label.
I have no idea what I'm talking about. Have I even stepped into this pool of conversation?
I'm not wearing like people's names on me. You know, I don't wear, you know, like a lot of people who wear high fashion, it's that expensive. Look how much money I've got. This cost me so much. That's not what I'm about.
Yeah. No. Tell us about your hat, because that's quite special, isn't it?
The hat is actually a customised hat. My brother customised this particular hat. It's got a spider's web on, you know, a little tribute to Ziggy Stardust and the spiders, big spider.
Right, so we're talking about these shows. Boy George and Culture Club live, Kenwood House on Saturday the 17th of June. These are dates for your diary. Here we go. Kenwood House on Saturday the 17th of June, the South of England Showground on Saturday the 16th of July, Englefield House, which is a beautiful venue, Englefield House in Berkshire, on Saturday the 23rd of July. Tickets at culture-club.co.uk. Who owns Culture Club without the hyphen? Because you need to get on their case.
Oh, I know.
What
Who
is
owns Culture Club anyway? I think John Moss.
You went there. I wasn't going to ask you about that. Right, come on.
You can ask me. What do you want to ask me?
I don't know. What's going on? What's the...
Well, currently...
What's the latest SP with you and John?
We're one man down. John's not in the band, but that doesn't mean at some point he may reappear.
Which you would like to happen.
Well, I don't know if I'd like to. I just, you know, I'm open to it being... at the moment, he's suing us, so I wouldn't like him to right now. But, you know, I'd like to be... at some point, he's going to realise he's making the biggest mistake of his life because his band's terrible. He should come back to us. We're amazing. She's got a band called Ridiculous. Come on.
You could have the battle of the bands, but the two culture clubs.
The answer is simple. He either lets me write all the songs are ridiculous because obviously they'll be better, or he comes back to us.
So you could have a Culture Clash or the Culture Club Clash.
And I want to start my own band. I think I'll just basically start a band called Belligerent.
Belligerent George.
Belligerent George.
Love
and the spiders from Eltham.
Now, listen, you played Carfest a couple of years ago for us. You were amazing. What is it like now for you getting on stage? You know, what are we now? We're 80, nearly 40 years on.
I think it's, you know, a new experience for me because I don't approach it with fear like I used to.
Was it always fear, or was it fear in the middle? And
fear of not being perfect, fear of...
Even at the beginning?
All the way through, I think. And then suddenly you go, actually, you just need to work harder on this actual thing, so rehearse.
Yeah.
Learn your parts, you know, don't wing it. Take a piece of paper on stage. That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, learn things and arrive with passion. And, you know, I know we're good live. I just can't wait to play. You know, that's where we're the best.
It's the fear of the icing, isn't it? It's so weird because you've done literally all the hard work, but it's the last 5% that really makes it shine.
I think people also, you have to understand, people are there to support you. They're not there to, you know, have a bad time. So they're not there. Like, especially at your thing, it's such a big kind of love fest, isn't it?
You know.
And so people are eating and they're out. And if the weather's good, that's an added bonus. But people are out to have a good time, and all you're doing is making them feel better.
Can I say thank you for your Ukraine donations?
Absolutely. I was so excited because I've never done that before. I'm like, how much to sell a song for? You know.
Well done.
Not bad.
It's £12,000, so thanks so much. So in between now and the live dates, what might happen in your diary? More rugby?
I have an art show in Denmark on Thursday.
Wow.
I do a lot of stuff in Europe at the moment. That seems to be where my kind of art career is kind of going.
Right.
I'm very excited about the show. And I hope I sell loads. Because it's like applause when you sell a painting.
Who do you like, actually? Who do you like as an artist?
Everyone, really. I mean, Banksy, obviously, is my favourite because of the humour. But Basquiat, Warhol, amazing. Picasso, all of
them. Do you have any special art at home?
Yeah, I mean, my art's all over. My own art is all over the wall. I've got one... I can't say what I've got. I have nothing worth any value in my house.
I have nothing worth nicking this Thursday when I won't be home.
Some Clarence Cliff parts that might be worth a few pounds.
George, it's great to see you, man. Is there anything you'd like to get out there before?
I've got a Rottweiler. Just put that out there.
Okay, he's got a Rottweiler.
Called
that
Diablo.
Rottweiler is available to look at. Rottweiler.com. Don't mess with Diablo.com, you idiot burglar people. Anything else you'd like to say before you go?
No.
Before we go together?
It's been lovely to see you. Always a pleasure. And the only one thing, we got some new music coming up, which is very exciting.
All right.
Kind of inspired by John.
Well, you're always welcome to come and play here every Friday.
It's called The Next Thing Will Be Amazing, and it's actually inspired by this terrible mediation we have with John Moss and lawyers. Didn't go well.
Right.
So I thought things can only get better.
Okay, but is the door open for John, or are you just available to hear the knocking?
I feel like he has to make that decision. Since he's the one suing me.
Right.
So once he stops the lawsuit...
Does it worry you, that? Does it keep you awake at night?
No.
Right.
No, it really doesn't. I'm not bent out of shape about it at all. I'm kind of... I don't hate John. It would be so much hard work for me.
I always say about things like this, we know how this ends, this thing called life. We know how it ends. Nobody wins ultimately.
You know, it's... Yeah, I'm cool with it. I think it'll be what it's going to be and, you know, I'll always be happy.
All right, mate. It's great to see you. Love it. Can we put a picture of that hat on Twitter?
You can.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Whether it's a podcast, a quiz show, a stand-up tour, a film, or on your telly, our next guest will always produce the goods. Series 4 of Rob and Ramesh Versus is alive and kicking on Sky Max.
Don't tell us we got Rob. I don't want Rob.
So here to tell us more.
Please tell us it's not Rob.
Who is it?
Which one is it?
It's one half of television.
They haven't been revealed yet. There's a curtain. They're about to step through it.
Oh, it's Ramesh Ranganathan.
Yes, it's Ramesh. We got the good one.
Yes. Congratulations, guys.
I love what you could have won.
Some other show's got Rob, you've got me.
How you doing, mate?
I'm really good. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Welcome back
Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to this amazing TV show, Rob and Ramesh Versus. What are you getting up to straight off the bat? Come on.
Well, we're doing... We did the Strongman episode that came out last night.
Yep.
And we're doing Rob and Ramesh versus the West End.
Yeah.
And we're doing a two-part of Rob and Ramesh versus restaurants where we set up a pop-up. That's essentially the aim of the show.
Right. And then Let's dive into The Strongman first of all. So yeah. What does Rob and Ramesh versus The Strongman mean?
Well, the World's Strongest Man contest is something that Rob and I have kind of been into.
Yeah, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. It's so good, right? So we just thought we wanted to sort of get an insight into what that world was about, what the training... You know, obviously you've got an idea of what training's required, but we just sort of thought, let's see... You know when you watch it and you go, how strong are these guys? Yeah. You know, because you keep getting told, they give you the stats, and you think, I want to know what exactly it is like to try and lift some of these things up. And so we did it. Turns out it is really hard. I mean, it's
incredible, isn't it?
It could have been a 30-second episode,
Who would have thought The World's Strongest Man actually does feature The World's Strongest Man? Because one could be forgiven for mistaking their bulk and their build and their physicality, their profile, if you like, for not being as strong. Big, yes,
sure,
but not necessarily strong. However, we couldn't be more wrong.
No, they are incredible. It's not... Do you know what? Physically incredibly strong... But also, the two things that surprised me about it were, one, technique has so much more to do with it than... I mean, I knew that technique was involved, but you can add so much just by the way that you do things over and above how strong you are.
Correct.
And the other thing is sort of mental determination. That is, you know, that is something that neither Rob or I... have really.
Well,
you have to be wired differently.
But you do in certain aspects of your life. It's interesting.
Possibly, but I think for that, you have to be, you know, that single-minded focus of like being willing to put your body through anything.
Yes.
To get that goal. I can't imagine.
No, but you can stand on a stage with a microphone in front of tens of thousands of people, and that would give people. Jingles, most people.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's about your lane, isn't it? I suppose that.
I guess so, yeah, because, you know, to me, I sort of, when you talk about stand-up, I think, well, that I find that exciting. I love doing this. So that doesn't feel like, I want to get better at it.
But there's a technique.
Sure. But I can't, those guys are like, the vibe. We went to Magnus Ver Magnusson's gym in Iceland.
Yeah.
And just the general atmosphere in there, those guys they have like these sniffing salts just before they lift to get them just like really, so they just do it and just go and like scream and like shout and beat their chest and then lift this it's crazy.
And do you think there's any link to you know the country, the land of Iceland, and being strong and having that sort of inner steel?
I think so. You know, you think about the number of strong men that come from Iceland is disproportionate to the population, yeah, isn't it? And so I think just that lifestyle, that culture, they're so outdoorsy.
They are so outdoorsy.
And so I just think it lends itself to creating lots of the strongest men.
I love Iceland. I've only been once, but I did love it. So, I mean, did you get to see much of the country itself?
Yeah, we did. We did a lot of driving around there. I just think it's...
It's that circular road, isn't it, that goes around the whole country?
Yeah, and even the town going into the city is... It's just... I get sort of nervous when I use the word vibe, but the vibe in Iceland, I just like it. It's just relaxed.
Why
just
do you get nervous about it? Because I agree with you entirely.
Well, I just don't like saying the word vibe. I just feel like, you know, people sort of think, why is it, you know...
No, but you are right.
But it is the vibe.
But I think every country has that. When you step out of a plane, I really think that is a thing, and you get that country's vibration and frequency.
I totally know what you mean. You know, like sometimes where you like going somewhere...
Yeah.
And you can't, and somebody goes, why do you like going somewhere that much? And there's nothing tangible that you can give in your answer. It's just, I like being in that place, you know, and I think Iceland's like that.
I agree entirely. I love Iceland so much, you know, and I sort of suited it. People thought I was Icelandic.
Yeah, you've got that about you.
Yeah, and I had a bit of stubble going on at the time, and, you know, I would walk into shops, and I think the staff often greeted me in Icelandic, which I sort of liked, and I didn't want to disappoint them, so I just nodded. You know, I am Icelandic. I don't feel very talkative today. You know, that kind of thing. My wife said, they think you're Icelandic. I said, I don't know, how cool is this? Yeah. How cool is this? It's even cooler than being outside, which is really cool because it's really freezing. So that was fun. It was on last night, but of course, lots of people watch your show over the weekend.
Sure.
My kids love your show.
How
sweary is this one?
Quite. I don't want to.
Noah, who's 13, has learned most of his swear words from your programs, not just this one, by the way.
I know it's not big or clever, but I just can't.
Well, especially
help it.
when you're being tested as you are, and you're because we talked about boxing chess this week. You've got to do that.
Really?
It's a new sport, boxing chess, because it's to do with cognition and physicality.
Okay.
So it's how much does physical exertion take away from your cognitive ability? Mm. So they box, and then when the bell rings for a break, they play chess.
Wow.
I know. And the chess is their rest. And it's right. The same opponents against each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, one might win the boxing match but lose the chess match. Mm. However, usually the person who wins the chess match also wins the boxing match, because boxing can be very... cognitive and strategic. Well, it should
right,
be anyway.
Right, right. Okay.
That's interesting, isn't it? You should try that.
Yeah.
Boxing chess.
I find either of those things daunting. Putting them together, I don't know.
Yeah. Ramesh, you are wonderful. Rob and Ramesh versus Series 4, Episode 2, continues Thursday, 9 p.m. on SkyMax. But you can catch up on last night's show, which was the opening episode of this season. Rob and Ramesh versus Strongman. They head to Iceland to train with former Strongman champion Magnus Ver Magnusson. What a great name.
It's a great name and a great guy.
So good they named him twice. Absolutely. Almost, didn't they? And make the most of this before Ramesh signs his big TV deal with Sydney's.
Yeah, this is my opportunity to say goodbye to everyone
yeah,
in the UK.
Yeah, goodbye to the UK.
thanks
a
lot.
By the way, don't tell Mrs. Ranganathan, because she's not going to know about it. He's going to leave the house on Sunday afternoons.
I think so, yeah.
Back
yeah.
Thursday afternoons.
Yeah.
She'll be none the wiser, but she'll be so much richer.
Oh, she'll have no idea what's going on.
Thanks, Ramesh.
Thank you.
You are absolutely awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, we've heard from a bunch of beautiful guests already, but still to come on this, the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky on Virgin Radio. The fun runner, Bryony Gordon, gently jogs us through her 10Ks in 10 days in 10 ways challenge, all in aid of mental health mates. Acting powerhouse John Sim dives into the second series of his feature-length smash hit ITV crime drama, Grace. The King of Country, Keith Urban, gives us all the latest on his new single, Night Falls, and his huge Whistle Stop UK tour. And the mesmerising Laura Carmichael brings her class and style to the studio with news of the latest Downton adventures in the brand new Downton movie, A New Era. So let's get right back to it. Dapper Dave, who's next?
Whether it's small screen or big, our next guest always delivers the goods, or receives the goods on a silver platter in this case. The new movie Downton Abbey, A New Era is in cinemas nationwide from this Friday. So join us as we say hi, society, to the wonderful Laura Carmichael.
Hello, Laura.
Hi.
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you so much.
Well done.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, my goodness me. So it's the second Downton movie. The first one was called Downton Abbey. This one is called Downton Abbey, A New Era, for various reasons, some of which we can discuss on the radio, some of which we must not discuss on the radio. First of all, tell us about the premiere. You're on the front page of every paper today. You, that is. Some of the other cast, but mostly you in that
mad,
amazing dress.
It's just about the dress. It's always about the dress.
No.
But yeah, it was so fun. We had such a nice time. But yeah, we're all feeling it this morning.
Tell us how one prepares for an event like last night.
Well, I feel very lucky. You have like an amazing team. I have an amazing stylist and hair and makeup, and they come and make you feel amazing. And yeah, it feels like it's a big build up. It feels like a real treat to get glammed up like that. And yeah, we had a really, really nice time.
See, cool. Ozzie Jane is planning for her wedding.
Yes.
You've met Ozzie Jane now.
Yes.
And Bobby, her husband-to-be, works here, and they're talking about not having a first dance. That's not going to happen.
They have to have a first dance.
Of course
dance.
They do. Of course they do. But planning for a premiere from an elegance point of view is probably not dissimilar to deciding what to wear at a wedding.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think I feel very lucky that there's a team of people that have an excellent input into what I'm going to wear. So yeah, that's great. But yeah, a kind of big build up, you know, face mask before you go, and yeah, great hair and makeup that make you feel really glam and special.
Tell us about the dress, because everybody's talking about the dress.
Yes, it's, I'm going to have to try and say it right, it's Giambattista Valli, it's couture, and yeah, it's a lot of fabric. It was, yeah, I was nervous of it all, but the wind blew in the right direction and it worked.
Did you sit down in it?
I did, but do you know what? We snuck out early to go and change, Michelle and I, because we both had pretty impractical dresses to watch the movie in. So, but we wanted to watch it, so we just like quickly went and changed into something that you could sit down in, and yeah, then snuck back into the cinema. But we were sat in the seats, you know, right at the front where you're really, really looking up, so we felt like we were looking up people's noses. But yeah, we just wanted to see the end, because it's a really special movie. We were sobbing in the front row.
So what I like it when movies are about movies.
Yeah.
And in this one, Downton doesn't stage a movie, but it houses a movie.
That's right. Yeah, so it becomes a location for a film, which is so that's you know, it's so funny. It's so like this world. I feel like Lord and Lady Carnarvon, who you know own Highclere Castle, will relate to this movie in lots of ways. Because it does show what happens when a film crew come and take over your home. But yeah, it brings so much humour to the movie because everyone is so excited to have these film stars in the house, and that kind of status that we're so used to in Downton kind of completely disappears because everyone is starstruck by these, you know, Hollywood superstars.
So who are the Hollywood film stars that pitch
up?
So
we've got Laura Haddock and Dominic West, right. and they're both brilliant. They're so
and they'll
area.
Love that, won't they?
Oh
just
God, it's
messing
so
about.
Fun. Exactly, and Maggie gets this sort of hilarious storyline with them because she's just sort of disgusted by the idea of actors, and it just seems so boring.
Which is so hilarious.
It's so funny. And she's just completely bored by the whole thing, and everyone is going, and then you do it again. You know, it's just all of these things that people say to you when you're making a film, which is, it feels very glamorous, but actually it's very boring because you just do the same thing over and over again. So yeah, that's sort of one story arc. And then there's another kind of mystery that Violet's been left this villa in the south of France, by a gentleman she used to know. So there's a bit of a mystery of why has that happened. And I'm one of the lucky ones. I got to go to the south of France, and we go to sort of investigate the past and what happens. And yeah, Edith's got her journalist hat back on. So she thinks she can write an article about how people are holidaying in the south of France, which was like a new thing at this time. So yeah, it's really glamorous. And yeah, we went in during the kind of lockdown period. We were still kind of coping with travel restrictions, but we got there. And then
where did you go?
To the south of France. So we were staying in Nice, and then, oh God, I can't remember the other name of the place, but it was just stunning. Like, yeah, we were near Cannes and in this incredible, incredible villa. And we had to quarantine there for 10 days, but we took over a hotel. So it wasn't
the worst quarantine ever.
It was kind of great. So we were all bubbled up, and yeah, it was amazing. It looks so gorgeous, and it just brings such a freshness to the movie, I think.
Would the Wise Money go on a third movie?
I don't know. I mean, it's all we're talking about in the interview, so I don't know. We really love making it.
I think it's got to be a yes, isn't it?
I mean, we'll see.
You want to make it. It's going to be a huge hit again.
Yeah.
People are going to love it for so many reasons that we can't talk about.
Yeah. I know.
I think we've done pretty well being circuitous.
Yeah, you've done very well.
In our conversation.
Yeah.
Anything you'd like to say before we finish?
Just I hope people love it. I hope people come to the cinema and watch it on the big screen because, yeah, it does look really, really good.
Right, and what are you going to get up to this summer, Laura Carmichael?
Oh, do you know, I've no idea. I've got loads of weddings, don't you? Just after...
Catch-up time,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's catch-up.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that, seeing loads of mates and, doing a bit of travel, maybe.
All right, any festivals?
Oh, I hope so. I really hope
so. Which one have you got in your sights?
I mean, I'd love
sights?
To go to Glastonbury. I love that. But, yeah, that would be a dream. I'm still working on that.
All right.
Yeah.
If anybody from Worthy Farm is listening, we have a very worthy contender for a comp ticket or two here. Laura, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, it's awesome to see you again. Well done, congratulations. You look amazing on the front page of the papers. You've done a great job with you and your team. Downton Abbey, A New Era in cinemas nationwide this Friday. And from what we're hearing from Mira and Ozzy Jane, it is a fantastic watch.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
She's famous for putting pen to paper, but right now is putting foot to floor. She's slap bang in the middle of her 10Ks in 10 days challenge, all in aid of mental health mates. So here to explain how you can jog away the mental fog, there is no funner runner than Bryony Gordon.
It's all true. What he said is all true. Hi, Bryony.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. 10K already done. Well begun is half done. You're almost completely done today.
I ran here, yeah, so I'm doing 10K every day for 10 days.
Yeah, but today's 10K is done.
Totally done. I'm not going to do any after this. I'm going to get in a taxi, go home, and refuse to do anything for the rest of the day.
Can I suggest that, because you ran here from your home in Battersea, which is almost exactly 10K door to door.
Yeah.
Can I suggest you don't get in a taxi and walk back, because it's such a beautiful day today.
Well, but so the point is, the whole point of me doing this
yes,
is
yes.
that I am not naturally an athletic person.
Yeah, you have run a million marathons. marathons.
I have. I love running. I love exercise. But the whole point is that me, I'm doing the 10Ks in 10 different ways to show people that exercise is for everyone.
Right.
So for me, exercise was, I was always terrified of it. You know, we have this British thing, don't we, at school. It's like, if you're not really good at it, you shouldn't do it, which is just rubbish. And it was only when I started, and also as a woman, I always used to think it was about making myself smaller and, you know, getting a, you know, a smaller waist size. And the moment I started exercising for the gains and not the losses, for like the mental clarity, was the moment that it transformed for me. So I kind of wanted, I set up this thing called Mental Health Mates, which is 6 years ago, which is peer support, where you can come together, get outside, go for a walk, connect with people, like-minded people. And I wanted to do something to sort of raise money for that, but also, you know, show people that you don't have to, you know, we don't have to run for a time or, do you know what I mean, to be the fittest, strongest, fastest. You can just do it to be kind of the happiest and most content.
Feel great. Get high on your own supply.
Yeah. And it all culminates next Monday with the Vitality 10K. And there's a special wave, which I founded a couple of years ago, called Celebrate You. And it's about running for your head and your heart. So there'll be like 1,000 women and hopefully men as well. And we're all just going to have a lovely time.
And this is Bank Holiday Monday.
Yeah.
And it's going to be nice weather.
Hopefully.
Where's that going to happen?
Huh?
Where is it going to happen?
Oh, it happens in, it starts, I think it will end at Buckingham Palace.
That's nice, isn't it?
It is nice, yeah.
Mentalhealthmates.co.uk. Mentalhealthmates.co.uk if you want to get involved or find out more about what we're talking about anyhow today. But it's a beautiful day. They say it's going to cloud up by lunchtime. I don't understand. I mean, I'm not a meteorologist last time I looked, but how does that work? There's no wind, so the clouds can't blow in from anywhere. It's a very windless day. There's no moisture on the ground, yeah, for the sun to evaporate. So where's the cloud going to come from?
There's a tiny little wisp that wasn't there half an hour ago.
I know, and that's minded me to ask the question, where's that wisp come from? Yeah. Did you bring it with you? Is it from Battersea?
It is actually quite windy, yeah.
That's, is it windy?
Yeah, I'm so fast that I created wind as I ran, yeah.
Well, come on, let's keep on about this, because this is something else really important I want to talk to you about, because you came in here with a certain glow, and you've now shared with us why that might be. But before we get onto that, tell us just more about your 10Ks in 10 days. How far, are you 6, 7 in, or how?
I've just done number 4. So I'm doing all different people. My first one was with a friend of mine called Emma Campbell, who has secondary breast cancer. Running's really important
to her.
How
is she doing?
Really good, yeah. And running has become a really important thing to her recovery.
Yeah, tool.
Yeah, and then on Sunday, I guided an amazing guy called Dr. Amit Patel, who lost his sight suddenly 10 years ago around Blackheath. And, you know, for him, being able to get outside has been a kind of quite a frightening thing, but it is also really important.
How did you feel guiding somebody else?
Well, it became really, I was really anxious about it, but he was like, just relax, give me your elbow and just walk normally and we're going to be fine.
Right, you've done similar, haven't you, Mass?
Yeah, I have. I've done non-tethered guiding at the Windsor Half Marathon once, so I had to, you know, we were trying to set a world record that day as well, and we did, but it was basically Jules, one of our bid winners for Children in Need, was blindfolded. We were raising money for a charity, and he was not allowed to touch me at any point on the way around, so I had to just basically shout at him all the way, just follow my voice. It's really hard, but, you know, really rewarding.
And does the sense of responsibility to both of you, this question, does it take away from the effort of running? I suppose it might do in that sense.
Yeah, well, especially not thinking about
it. Exactly.
Also, we were just talking the whole, you know, I was just so fascinated.
And
about
the running was just happening.
Yeah.
Isn't that a great moment?
And that is what it's about. It's about connection.
Yeah.
And then yesterday I did a speed walk with Fern Cotton around Richmond Park, and we just gossip. It was more about the ranting than the running. The whole way round, I managed to fall over a tree branch.
Congratulations. Was it a root or a branch?
A root in the ground, and roll my ankle. So I was, it was a bit touch and go, I just carried on and it's all fine. And then today, running to you, and then tomorrow I am going to run with David Weir, the Paralympian, who is wheelchair athlete.
And he's a superman.
Yeah. I mean, like, also, he was like, can we, because he's training, he was like, can we go quite slow? And I was like, I have a feeling
that you're slow.
That you're slow is my absolute fastest, yeah. You know? So we've got various people. Adele Roberts, who's a DJ who was diagnosed with bowel cancer last year.
How's she doing?
She's doing good. Yeah, I think, again, running has been really important to keeping herself going.
Yeah, for so many reasons.
And I think that's the thing. Exercise is about so much more than how it makes you look. You know.
Oh, God, yeah, you're so right. And also, if you feel great, you sort of don't care about how you look. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, my God, absolutely.
It's different, isn't it? Because you feel like you look good on the inside. You can almost visualise it.
But also, I don't know, like, as a woman, yeah, exercise was all about, oh, I'll make myself, you know, I'll lose weight. It was a punishing, yeah, you know. And I'm not, I'm like a size 18. I'm a larger lady. And it's...
It was self-flagellation, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I love it, you know, and I don't care. I don't care that I'm not the fastest person in the world. I don't care. People often say to me, like, I remember when I did my first marathon, they were like, what was your time? And I was like, well, what was your time? And they were like, oh, I haven't done a marathon. And I go, well, exactly then. I can't swear on radio. Bleep off. You know, it's this kind of this obsession,
yeah,
we have.
I'm with you all the way. I think being a runner is a bit like owning a Land Rover. Because I don't know if you know this, but all Land Rover owners wave to each other when they pass each other in their cars. And I think if you're a runner, you just have this massive respect for other runners all the time.
Yeah, and you don't... Because I used to think people would, like, laugh at me, you know. Look at that fatty. Do you know what I mean? But no, don't. It's just like... Hi, because also we're all in our own heads when we're running, aren't, yeah, we? We're just doing it for our own reasons.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, the bigger the runner, the more respect I have for that, yeah, person, because it's so much harder for them than it is for me. And that inspires me. Brian, have a great rest of the week and good luck on Monday. What's happening on Monday one more time?
Celebrate You, London Vitality 10K, where we can all run together.
And end up at a palace.
And end up at Buckingham Palace. Yeah,
yeah. Palace of Dreams. Both inside and outside. Mentalhealthmates.co.uk for more. Bryony Gordon. Bryony, we love you.
I love you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So long. Farewell. Auf Wiedersehen.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From Life on Mars and 24-Hour Party People to solving some horrible murders in Brighton, he can do it all. Series 2 of The Brilliant Grace continues this Sunday at 8 p.m. on ITV. So please welcome the man who makes Grace so ace. It's the simply wonderful John Sim!
Morning, John!
Good morning, everybody.
For people who don't know, because there's no point in preaching to the choir, that's not why you're here. People who already love this show, you know, are addicted to it. Who is Roy Grace? What does he get up to? And when did he do it last? And when will he do it next?
Well, last time he did it was last Sunday. He got up to being a detective. That is what he is. He's a superintendent detective, very good at his job. His wife went missing about 6 years ago, so he's a bit haunted by that. He's a brilliant detective, but can't solve that particular crime. And he is, yeah, he's just, he's got no drinking problem or anything like that. He's a decent bloke, and he's a very, very, very good detective. And on Sunday, we've got a new element that comes into the show in the form of Zoe Tapper, who plays a character called Cleo, and she takes a shine to him. So there's a little bit of sunlight.
There's a frisson.
Yes, there's a beam of sunlight that comes into his dark world.
All right, so in many ways, the pilot episode for this was the first story that was adapted from this amazing series of books.
Yeah.
And that was a couple of years ago. You filmed it a couple of years ago, didn't you?
Yeah, we filmed it a couple of years ago. It was on last year.
Yeah.
So we filmed the first two, the one that was on last Sunday and the pilot we, yeah, did together a couple of years ago in lockdown, actually, which is strange. And the new lot, which starts on Sunday, which will be episode 3, we filmed fairly recently. So they're releasing all four together, so it's a four-parter. So you get,
yeah, and
more.
The reason I mention this is because one could be forgiven it was never going to happen again, because the first episode, as they all are now, are feature length.
Yeah,
which
absolutely
is super,
yeah,
cool, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great. That's the brilliant thing about it, because they're all feature length standalone stories, and they're novels. So we adapt each novel at a time. And even though you've got a through line going through with the characters and things and a storyline going through that, there's a different case, and it's a standalone book on its own.
So it's 17 books by this genius author.
Yeah, yeah.
And have you read them all?
I haven't read them all. I think I'm about 3 from the end. I've got 3 left.
All right.
I have to stop reading them when I'm filming because I get confused. I don't know what case I'm supposed to be solving.
And also, I would imagine you get very excited about potentially making them all.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. I'd be well up for that. I mean, it's brilliant to do it because the more we do, the more the whole cast, we all get into it. And, you know, we're sort of like finding our feet with these characters now. And the more we do, it's just great. And they're standalone, like I say, standalone stories. They're all tried and tested formulas and great plots. So, yeah, hopefully they're all, you know, if we do them justice, they'll be brilliant thriller every Sunday night.
There's a couple of things I don't know how people do what they do in our business. One is I don't understand how stand-up comedians get up there with a microphone and you know, in front of like 10 or 10,000 or 100,000 people and talk for an hour and a half and people love it, as I do, by the way. I don't understand how they do, where the magic. I know there is loads of magic there,
yeah.
Because there's so much, I just don't get it, right? And I'm always bemused by it, and I'm also equally bemused by thriller writers and how they keep coming up with things,
yes,
puzzles that literary puzzles that we couldn't even write the first paragraph of. They all make sense. Well, not all of them, but the best authors, like your chap, Peter James, they're all brilliant. They're all cliffhangers. How might he do it, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I agree with you. How do they come up with all these different plots? But the thing is, I think the alchemy we've got with this one is they are very successful novels. So Peter James obviously has a formula which works. And we have the brilliant Russell Lewis, who did Endeavour and Morse. And he's the one that's adapting them.
What a pedigree.
So, yeah.
What a
fantastic
pedigree. I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
that's like Elon Musk sorting out your fuse box, isn't it? It's like... He's like, it doesn't get any better, does it, really?
No, it's perfect.
Oh, my goodness me. How is there any of you in him, in Roy Grace?
I guess a little bit. He's much more calm than me. He's a different character to one that I've played. He seems awfully grown up. So no. but yeah, of course there is. You bring an element of yourself to every character, don't you? Definitely. So
he's quite philosophical as well, isn't he?
He is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's a nice guy. I mean, he's not. You know, there's no sort of edge to him, and he's very, very calm. And that's the thing that I have to keep playing. He doesn't get flustered. Very, very rarely gets flustered. So if at some point I do get flustered, it'll register. Hopefully.
So we can look out for those.
Maybe, yeah.
Those moments,
the fluster moments.
Because they do say, don't they, for us to fall in love with a character, be it in a book or on the small screen or the silver screen, or in life or in music. You know, if they show their vulnerability, you know, that makes us feel better about ours, you know, and we're not on our own. And that's often what draws us to people in life generally, but also, you know, as far as characters are concerned. But so would his vulnerability be then his missing wife? Would that be that, do you think?
I guess it would be. It sort of hangs over him, and it hangs over any relationship, you know, either with Glenn, his partner, is you know, the detective, and his team, or the new love interest that comes in. It's never going to be easy because it's unsolved, and so he doesn't know where she is, if she's dead or been kidnapped. He has no idea. So yeah, you do see a vulnerable side, and you see his humanity. He's been through it a little bit.
Yeah, you've been through it a little bit because you're doing the rounds, aren't you?
I'm doing the rounds.
Look at that!
I'm doing the rounds.
Tell us about the rounds. Tell people about the rounds. I mean, once again, we're not fighting fires, fighting wars, or saving lives.
No, we're
not. However, the rounds are the rounds.
The rounds are the rounds.
He's trying to stretch out a bit.
I just had a banana, though. I feel better now. Yeah, it's good. I mean, you know, it's good. I want people to watch it, so I go around, tell everybody what it's about, and, you know, hopefully they'll watch it. And yeah, I'm proud of it. I think it's a good show.
This is a great show.
Yeah.
Well, John, have a lovely Friday.
Thanks, mate. You too.
Okay, TV Grace Series 2, Episode 2 is on Sunday nights, the big ITV Sunday night show, 8 p.m. You had Episode 1 of a brand new run last week. You can catch up with that again, as you can with the pilot episode, which was filmed a couple of years ago and aired last year. Catch up available now on ITV Hub and BritBox. And that's about it from us.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's a hugely successful, globally adored musician and married to one of the all-time great Hollywood beauties. He must be miserable. His new single, Night Falls, is out now. So, ladies and gentlemen, please join us as we go over the top with a man from down under. It's Keith Urban!
Keith, you're here. You're in the UK. We can't quite believe how lucky we are.
Yeah, I'm not an introvert, so I'm glad that I'm here.
When did you get here? How long are you staying for? What are you going to get up to?
We got here about 5 days ago. And started rehearsals up in Doncaster, up in Donny. And then we're now here in Birmingham.
See, now that vernacular of you saying Donny, it sounds like either A, you've been here before, or B, you've picked up the colloquialisms pretty quickly. Which is it?
More B than A.
More B than A.
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, I don't think I've been to Doncaster before. I've been to Birmingham a few times, but not Doncaster.
Okay, but you are somebody nowadays who immerses themselves in wherever they are, and you give it all the beans, don't you? You are fully present.
Absolutely. Of course, like you. Just like you.
But it's been a steep learning curve, hasn't it, Keith? We were talking about you. We've been talking about you all week because we've been looking forward to coming on the show. And about the fact that you first obviously hit the heights and experienced the double-edged sort of fame in Australia. For people who don't know, because it's not about preaching to the choir here, you know, we want to preach to the unconverted as far as you're concerned. Can you give us a bit of a potted history about yourself? Do you feel comfortable doing that?
How long you got, mate? I mean, that's... I started playing guitar when I was 6, and I quit school at 15. I started playing in bands at 15, and that's it. It's all I've ever done. I've played music. I had odd little jobs here and there, but mostly I've been lucky enough to play music. Always wanted to travel the world and tour and play and write songs, and took years and years and years of being in Nashville to finally sort of break through, and then... I don't know what else to say other than I've been doing it a long time and very grateful for it.
Can we talk about the fact that you found fame and then fame found you, but you've got to be careful to what fame can do?
Sounds like a Dr. Seuss book I shouldn't read. Just go ahead.
It's been a wonderful journey. It's been an amazing journey, and it's been one of a redemption and resurrection, and it's awesome. And you know, you get all the power, don't you? When you do the work, you get all the extra juice that comes with that, all the extra joy, all the extra freedom, all the extra creativity.
I think, you know, you get the contrasts. You get the contrasts. I think for me, the early days in Nashville were really difficult. It took me years, literally years and years and years and years of constant rejection. And yeah, it took its toll on me, and I wound up in bad places. And but it's the contrast of it, Chris, you know? It's what I had to go through to get to where I am today that makes it what it is for me, much more so, you know?
Yeah, and the only way around is through. We know that, and we're all exactly where we're meant to be.
Eventually. I realise that... You know, years before, I sort of numb myself so I would go around something, over it or under it, but never through it.
Yeah.
And I think your point is that I finally did go through things.
Yeah, and it feels like it will be harder, more confrontational and more frightening, but it's actually, you know, a lot easier than you think. And it's the only way in the end. But, of course, it takes a lifetime to live and learn how to live.
I think everyone's got their own relationship to the struggles that each person listening has gone through. But, you know, I tell you, the one thing you need is great people around you.
Yeah.
And a purpose. And for me, you know, music has always been that purpose. It's always been that thing that keeps pulling me through and something I love, love, love to do. And anybody that comes to the show is going to see that so clearly.
If there are three moments, identifiable moments, and I'm sorry to force this on you because you might need time to think about it, but if there were three positive sort of golden touches of tipping points in your life, what might they have been, do you think?
I honestly find those things really hard to answer because they're not really, I don't single anything out. Someone said the other day, it's about balancing all the parts of your life. And then someone said, well, they're not parts, they're just your life.
Yeah.
It's just your life, and it's balancing every bit of it, really. So for me, it's still just balancing everything.
Tell us about Nightfalls, the new single, out now.
Yes, it's a song I wrote with a guy called Greg Kirsten, who some people will know, Mozella, who's a great songwriter. We wrote this last year, and I know that when we started writing the song, and they were like, what are you feeling, what are you thinking? And at the time, I just missed touring. I missed playing live. I missed being... particularly those outside summer concerts, you know, festivals, things like that.
Yeah.
But this song was really all about going to that kind of vibe. I mean, it opens with the line, we've been through some hard times, but I ain't going to lie. I don't want to think about that, not with you right here tonight. That's what this whole song's about. It's about life coming back again.
Yeah, no, I get it completely. It's everything's so important at the moment, isn't it? In a good way. I don't mean sort of self-important.
Yeah, no, but in a good way.
It's, you know, the arts have never been more important. You know, as people continue to take to the stage or do whatever it is they do in a sporting arena or wherever, however, outside or inside with other human beings, there's this sort of overwhelming, ever-present gratitude that we never thought we'd feel because we didn't, in many ways, knew it ever existed.
And that's the contrasts. We just have to have the contrast. And from what, you know, everybody's gone through the last 2 years, this summer is going to feel amazing. It already is.
Do you have any extraordinarily tall female Australian roadies with you at the moment?
Crazy enough, I do. Yeah.
So it's a family affair on the road and off the road and at the ranch. I love it, Keith. Anything else you'd like to say to your fans before we bid you farewell?
No, I'm just psyched to get up and start playing, and I want to know what songs you guys want to hear, and I'm in it with you. It's going to be a blast.
All right, mate. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much. Don't be a stranger, Keith Urban.
I will always call you Chris.
All right, pal.
Always.
Lots of love. KeithUrban.com is where you need to go for what just can only be described as amazing nights out. And there are seven of them to behold in the UK in the next 9 or 10 days.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.